You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of November. The Jazz have acquired Kyle Korver. They get a win in Brooklyn, and the defense clamps down. All things right in the Jazz world. We'll talk about it coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers. As the Jazz have made a trade and acquired Kyle Korver, we'll break that down. You can get this podcast every day on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and tell your smart all your podcasters and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Today's podcast brought to you by Intercap Lending, The Store, and Mizuma USA. All right, live show going on Facebook on Locked On Sports. Glad to have everybody with us for that. I'll try to get your questions to that to you in the process. And let me, though, do a quick little breakdown on the trade first, and we'll try to get to the game as well. So first thing on the trade, from a non-basketball standpoint, like what's the impact on us as a franchise and where we stand? You've given away 2 second-round draft picks. To me, they're always buyable. It's not a huge impact. And there's really not a huge, you know, we haven't had great success. You've had the moments, right? Korver, ironically, is a second-round pick, and you've had a Millsap, but you have as many Joel Bolland boys in the process. That's more often with a second-round pick. That's why you have those. That's why you got one for Trey Burke, is so you could do something like this. That's one of the picks that we moved. You moved Alec Burks, who probably wasn't coming back at the end of the year anyway, so you're trying to find someone who's a better fit for this season. I think we all admire Alec and the growth he's had and the way we've seen mature as a man and a person over the last 8 years. He's having one of his best shooting years. His work with he and Jeff Watkinson have been amazing. He's just so much of a more mature player than he once was. He's gotten so much better at a lot of areas of his game. At the same time, for whatever reason, he's not someone who, when you kind of look at the numbers, usually is on the right side of plus minus, and who's not someone who usually makes his team better, and is not someone who probably answered all the needs that the Jazz have right now in a Western Conference that's pretty crazy tight and feels like it's a pretty, you know, necessary tough time that you can't go too far without trying to figure some things out. So I think there's, AB, you lose, what you lose with Alec is you lose that isolation player. I'm not sure he was actually that good at it, frankly, by the time you got into finishing, but that is what you lose. He'd improved his game a considerable amount on the catch and shoot and some of those things. His rim finishing this year is at an all-time career high, which is a tribute to the amount of work he's put in. So, you know, this is a guy who's really battled his way back, is still he's a quality player, and the Jazz have he and the Jazz did a nice job developing his skills, but the Utah Jazz, according to Second Spectrum, have the number one offensive shot selection of anyone in the NBA. They have the third most amount of open looks of anyone in the NBA and wide open three-point shooting looks. They are 27th in the league in three-point shooting. And they have major floor spacing problems. You watch us play every single night, and it's very clear that we have significant floor spacing issues on a nightly basis where guys are wide open all the time because other guys aren't being guarded. And so what we're probably need more than anything else is someone who can come in here and bring defenders with them. And Kyle Korver can do that. Kyle Korver is truly one of the elite shooters in the NBA, even at 37 years old. I'll dig into that for you in a second here. But that's, you know, I think we have watched this. Anyone who's watched this team this year is pretty well aware of the fact that here's a guy who is, you know, brings you some spacing on a team that has just had, when you have Alec and Royce and Dante out there, teams just aren't guarding guys. And so I think that, I think that's what this deal is. All right, let's get into some of the numbers and background on the deal. Some people are asking my points gain number. Just looking at this year, Kyle's red hot, by the way. I think he went 6 of 9 from three in his last game, 3 of 3 in the game before that. So his numbers have spiked here recently. But Kyle right now, as a points gained, is a 1.0. Alec Burks on points gained is... Where's AB? Is a minus 0.1. So that's an upgrade offensively. A year ago, Kyle Korver with LeBron, and I'll talk about that, I think that those numbers are a little faulty, is a 1.3. Alec Burks last year with the Utah Jazz, so a more full sample size. AB last year was a minus 0.4. So that is an upgrade considerably. Let's talk about Kyle Korver for a minute and break that down, and then I'll try to get to your comments and your questions. He got hot, so he's shooting about 46% from three. He was at 44 and 49% the last 2 years with LeBron. His years without LeBron are 40, 41, 38. That's, I think, what you're really getting. I'll be surprised if we're getting a 45, 46% three-point shooter. His attempt level with LeBron was 12 three-pointers per 100 possessions. In Atlanta, it was 8, 9, and 9, or 8 and now 9. So I think that you have to look at, like, his percentage of field goal attempts with LeBron were 74 and 78% of his shots were threes. The years without LeBron were 64, 65, and 67. And I think that that is probably more realistic. When I'm evaluating Kyle Korver, I'm looking past those 2 years with LeBron and looking at him more as a descending 37-year-old from his Atlanta years to what to anticipate here. So is he – how old is – I mean, he's 37. Is age kicking in? Now, his game's pretty unique, or just unique. You can't qualify unique. His rim finishing is slipping. It's down to about 45, 46%. It was in the mid-60s and 70s. I think that's LeBron, not as much spacing. It was 65% his last year in Atlanta. His steal rate, which is 1.5 for his career, percentage point is now 1, 8.8, 1.5. So I think you're seeing he's aging. He's 37 years old. So there's no, like, pretending that he's not aging. One thing I look at with aging players is – particularly shooters, are there nights where they just don't have their legs? In other words, they shoot threes and they're making less than 30%. Last year, he did that in 26% of his games. The year prior, he did that in 24% of his games. But the year before that, in Atlanta, he actually did that in 30% of his games. So I'm not sure that that indicates a whole lot. Is he still an elite shooter? He is a career 47% corner three shooter. I mean, that... We'll get into how the Jazz are going to use him. That's the number right there. He's at 51% each of the last two seasons. He is a 47% career three-point, corner three-point shooter. Cleaning the glass has him above the break three. He has always been one of the best in the game. I mean, that's not – the above the break three is about a 35% three-point shot. His non-corner this year is 41. Last year was 42. The year before is 46. That's where I think the 46, 42, I kind of feel like is a little bit suspect. That's the LeBron numbers. So I go back to Atlanta, and his last stretch in Atlanta, he's at 38, 39, and this year at 41. So I think he's a 40% above the break three-point shooter. That's incredible. A 40% above the break three-point shooter is great. You just don't get those very often. The league average on that shot is probably, I could pull it up, but I would guess that it's about, well, let's not, it's 34.6. So you're 6 percentage points above the league average on that kind of shooting. It matters, and it matters on spacing a tremendous amount there. The He had not earlier been making the shot off the dribble, but he's made his last few off the dribble. So that changes things. This year he's getting 20% of his three-point shots as wide open, and he had knocked down about 50% of those. He's also able to make the three-point shot with defenders within 2 to 4 feet. If you kind of think about that, that's subtle. We don't actually have a single guy on our team who can take, Jay does it all the time, he never makes it, a contested three-point shot. There's a little something to it. Last year he got 27% of his shots as wide open threes, and this year he's down to 20% without LeBron. So again, that's the LeBron factor. Though the Atlanta offense, which is similar, he had 28% of his shots as open threes, and he made 45% of them. According to Synergy, he's in the 99th percentile of all spot up shooters. He's in the 95th percentile on guarded catch and shoot guys. This is one of the great shooters. LeBron impacted him so that I don't think you can go grab his numbers from the last year and a half and say that's what we're going to get. I think your bigger takeaway is, you know, here's a guy who was in, according to Clean the Glass, 76th percentile of three-point shooting, and he's going to slip a little. He's just going to get older. That's the reality. But it's still one of the elite guys in the league in that regard that the Jazz got on a team that's getting open looks and can't hit them. All right, I'll get to your questions coming up. Today's show is brought to you by InterCap Lending. That's who we did our mortgage with. They're a 40-year company in the mortgage space, in lending space, and I think you will find out the same thing we did. I know Ginger, just a longtime listener, emailed me the other day wanting to know Steve Carter's number, and hopefully she has an incredible experience with Steve. His number is 385-885-28. That's who did our mortgage. It's an innovative company, highly responsive, hyper-responsive, embraces change, really focused on the borrower experience, or direct issuer. So they service their own loan. They still actually have our loan right now, so you have a long-term relationship. They can, because they're a direct lender with no overlays and no additional requirements, they probably can get more difficult loans done. If you're a self-employed, have business assets, multiple properties, sometimes this gets complicated. Even if you have low credit, they can do it. 40 years in the business. Give Steve Carter a call, 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Tell him you're Locked On Jazz. You'll get the corporate discount. InterCap Lending, NMLS, 190465. For more information, go to intercaplending.com or call Steve, 385-885-28. Today's show is also brought to you by, or supported by, Mazuma USA. Mazuma, if you're a small business owner, 1 to 5 employees, and you're not using Mazuma, you are costing yourself time and money. And I don't want you to do that. That seems like a really bad idea. So let's see what we can do for you. Here's what Mazuma is. In fact, Anthony Irwin, Locked On Lakers, is using it. I was talking to him the other day. Loves it. So Anthony got set up. They got access to his information. They immediately had a call with a CPA as well as a bookkeeper. And for $75 a month, he ends up having his own CPA, his own bookkeeper. Every month he gets a report. Every quarter he gets a tax call. At the end of the year, all of his taxes are done for him. And it's all done with Mazuma USA. No contract, cancel anytime, no hidden fees. MazumaUSA.com, promo code LOCKED, or just call him directly for a free consultation. 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102. Mazuma USA. All right, let's see what we can do here. I had a call. Let me just check one thing here. I was supposed to have a call at, let's see. What did everybody say? Yep. Good. All right. I had a call at 1 o'clock Eastern that I had to move. So it sounds good. All right. Let's get to your questions now on the show. Happy for both players. Yeah. I mean, I think Alec is going to go have some big nights, particularly in Cleveland. Playing in a little less structure, just let him go play free. I don't know how efficient he'll be, but I think he'll have some big nights. Thank you, Andy. Hello, Alex. Good morning. Do you think putting Korver and Ingles in the corners with Donovan at the top and a pick and roll is going to be the Jazz go-to at the end of games? Yes, I do. Now, where's Kyle defensively? We're going to have to find out. But let's play with that. Donovan comes on a pick and roll. Ingles is either left side or lifted left side. Let's put him right side. Let's do two things. either way, Donovan rolls pick and roll left to right. Korver's in the short corner with Donovan. Driving, you're not leaving Korver. It's too easy a pass. You're not leaving him. So you're either now switching over and getting someone to Donovan, and you got to bring someone from the other side, and hopefully you can go get it to Ingles, or you're flipping up top, and then that's an open Rubio three that he's got to knock down. But Ricky's actually been okay on open threes in most of his career. Other side of this equation is what I think is actually even more exciting is you go and run the pick and roll. Donovan runs, Korver's in the corner. Gobert rolls on Korver's side. Donovan drives with two guys on his side. So it could be right hand. He's got a guy in the corner. He's got a guy lifted. Rubio, Gobert rolls. Korver's on the weak side corner. How are you who are you bringing in to hit on Rudy? I don't think I said that very well, but and visualize this. So top of the pick and roll top. Donovan comes off the pick. Somebody slides behind Donovan, so that takes one defender with him, probably Rubio. Ingles, let's say, is in that short corner on the near side, is on the corner on the near side. Rudy rolls. Korver is in that other corner. Who are you bringing in to knock to hit on? I have Ingles playing the four at this point, by the way. Who do you have hitting on Rudy on the roll? Like, that's not – there's no one there. Like, you're not leaving Korver in that corner to go put a body on Rudy, and if you do, then Rudy's just going to screen that guy. Rudy's going to stop his roll, screen that guy. Donovan's going to hit Korver for a 40, 50% corner three. Yeah, I mean, that's the essence of it. That's what the coaches on the plane last night were all excited about. Absolutely. Ingles played the four last night. Do you see more of that in the future? I thought Royce O'Neal played the four last night. Might be immaterial, but I do think we'll see more of it. George Niang can't find his stroke that he had earlier this year right now and defensively struggled. Tabo's done some nice things, but hasn't seemed to get his legs all the way back from surgery. Crowder has been in a terrible slump. At some point, you can't roll him out there for 30 minutes. So that links the game. But also, Brooklyn was unique because Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is really small as a 6'6 stretch four. So I don't know if you can play Royce O'Neal against Nikolai Mirotic, who's a 7-foot stretch four. And we'll see what he can do against Frank Kaminsky, who's a 7-foot stretch four off the bench for Charlotte. Charlotte's going to be really tough. Kemba plays at 35 feet out and comes downhill at you. But we can discuss that tomorrow on the show. I don't seek Alex long-term with the Cavs. I don't either, Andy. I don't know if he'll even finish the pre-trade deadline with the Cavs. The part of the reason the deal went down now is two things. One, I've heard rumors of other teams that were pretty heavy on trying to go get Korver. And there were actually at least one other team that I think was thought they had Korver in a fairly interesting deal that didn't obviously happen. The Jazz got in there instead. And then the second item on that is that it allows Cleveland to move Alec Burks still before the end of the trade deadline. I like the deal. I don't think Korver's going to fix our problems, but it'll be nice to have someone who can make a three. I'll miss Alec, but I don't really think he's been any good for the team for several years now, says Jason. Cody Hansen says, I'm a slacker. Where will Korver be in the rotation? I think this is what gets interesting. So Alec was really playing almost backup two. I think Korver is going to have to play three. So you have him backing up Ingles. And then depending on what you're doing for ball handling with him on the floor, Neto's been really, really good. Neto was the best point guard on the roster last night, unless Rubio's defense on D'Angelo Russell was at part of the reason why he shot the way he shot. I think that probably is something I might have to go back and watch and see whether that's really true. But Rubio closed last night. D'Angelo Russell had a bad night. I think you got to give Rubio credit for that. He was forcing him to his right hand, had him off balance. But offensively, Neto was the best point guard last night. He's really been good. He's executing. He plays with a fearlessness and aggressiveness. If he's still that, Donovan's your two. Dante becomes your backup two. Joe Ingles and Kyle Korver threes, and Royce O'Neal suddenly lacking minutes. So I think Royce O'Neal becomes your backup, plays some four with Crowder. I think that's what you began to see last night, is that Royce slides into that spot along the way. Dante's got to shoot the ball a little bit better too, by the way, at some point here. I just did that. Let's turn around before the Christmas trip. Okay. Wait, what Christmas trip? What? I have another flipping road trip? What Christmas road trip are you talking about? God forbid they put me back out on the road for another day. This is brutal. I don't even know what my family looks like. I got the greatest job in the world, and this hereby has just been terrible. We don't have a Christmas road trip, do we? We have a first of the year road trip, but we don't have the traditional Christmas road trip. They're just not ever letting us come home again. Now, besides Mitchell, we have no player that can really create. Why didn't they move a lesser talent like O'Neal and two picks for Korver? And how many more years does Korver have? All right, so first of all, I don't think you can do the trade with Royce O'Neal and Kyle Korver. It doesn't match up money-wise. I actually thought the minute I knew we had acquired Kyle Korver, I was pretty comfortable we traded Alec Burks. I don't think there was another player. I don't think the Jazz had another choice. I'll look at it right now, but just off the top of my head, you can't trade Dante yet till December 15th. You can't trade Favors yet till December 15th. So if the Jazz had wanted to trade for Kyle Korver, they could have tried. Jay Crowder could have been traded, but Cleveland already had Jay Crowder. And otherwise, I don't think there was another player on the Jazz roster that they could have traded. I mean, maybe Tabo, but I don't think that that's one that Cleveland would be interested in. But Royce O'Neal makes $1.3 million, so I don't think you could have made that trade. We're not under the cap. So you couldn't have made the trade you're saying, Brandon. It had to be a cap-approved deal. Alec Burks is at $11.5 million. Kyle Korver is at $7.5 million. We actually save about $3-4 million this year. And then Korver's got about $3 million that's non-guaranteed, that's guaranteed for next year, but not the whole deal. When will Korver be available? Not clear. It's been official. He's got to go through a physical. He has a flight coming in, I think, this afternoon. I don't know. They're practicing right now. I waited to do this with you instead of going to practice today. So I don't know whether or not he's at practice, but I don't think so. So that's the – maybe tomorrow. He could – I mean, if he's ready to go, he's available tomorrow. Be fun. It's going to be fun to watch Ingles and Korver bomb threes. I mean, there's a huge game changer if you suddenly have two guys that are shooting 40% from three. I really think that's a big deal. Preston Wright says he can't wait for my analysis on the trade. I hope that was not written right now because I'm 25 minutes into giving you my analysis into the trade, so I'm hopefully you feel like you've gotten some already. Does this trade set up something bigger in the future? No, I don't think so. I think this was simply the Jazz traded two second-round draft picks to get a player that fit their needs better than a player they had on their roster at the current time for this season in this playoff run. I think that's the easiest way to look at it. Today's show is supported by The Store at 6200 South and 20th East. Mudslide Cookies! But so much more. I don't want to undersell the greatness of The Store by only talking about the Mudslide Cookie. But I could. The Mudslide Cookie got rivaled, by the way, by one of the legendary Milk Bar cookies. I went to the Milk Bar, the Momofuku Milk Bar yesterday, and Christina Tazi, I think is her name, is the chef of that, and they have a cornflake marshmallow chocolate chip cookie that is awfully close to as good as the Mudslide Cookie. Now, you got to be in New York City, and you got to pay like $8 million for it, but it's pretty good. Anyway, the store... It's got the community feel. It's a great grocery store. Fabulous meats. They've done a whole taste test recently, which was really cool. I was with Amy, who's one of the buyers there, as well as other various jobs. And I was with Scotty. And we were walking through, and they were telling me about all the various different things they have going on. There's this thing called Hereford Beef. Scott and Jeff did 15 different tastes of Hereford Beef versus other. And Hereford won 15-0. So now, if you go to the back and you look at the meat case of the store, it's all Hereford beef. All of it. That's the essence of the store, though. Scott and Jeff are taking the time. They're not just taking whatever that fits and matches everything. Chef Paul's got new sandwiches and new wraps in the back for you to grab. The turkey and brie is terrific. Amy has made a brand new cilantro lime dressing that's really strong. You can always right there, turn to your left, get my lock pick and the orange juice that's there. Brett cheese section as well. All local farms from all around Utah. It's a great community place. And then people like June. Good old June Pie out of Heber, Utah. She's making these pies. Everyone's talking about it. And next thing you know, the store finds her. And now she's supplying to the store in Salt Lake City. Making people's lives different. Giving you great taste. It's the store, 60 during the South, 20th East. Wes Jenkins. Five Western Conference playoff teams would be out of the playoffs today. And T-Wolves and Spurs make sense with losing players, but do you think the Pels, Jazz, Houston are just having slow starts and will turn around soon? I talked about this with Sam Amick on Locked On NBA today. I just think schedule is a huge part of what's happened. The Jazz have now played two games against teams that are below 500. Houston and last night. I think it's worn us out. I think it's made us tired. I think it's incredibly difficult. I don't necessarily know what the long-term impact of that is. Of whether we turn this around quickly because of that or not. But I do think that it's a significant impact. And, like, Oklahoma City deserves great credit and Houston deserves great credit for, in Minnesota for winning a bunch of games recently, but they're doing it against lesser teams. And I think we would win those games also. Now, if we start losing a bunch of games to below 500 teams, then that's a problem. And we got to start winning at home. And I know we've played a bunch of teams without their star, right? I got it. I'm not the biggest believer in that entirely, by the way. I think for one game, teams can usually hang on. But Indiana got us when they were on their like fifth game without the guy. We clearly don't play very well against Indiana. How will Korver fit in the locker room with our guys? Kyle might be the most admired player in the NBA for his work, his preparation, his approach. He's kind of the next version of Ray Allen. So I think that'll be great. I was talking to Vince Legarza, who's one of our assistants, who was in Atlanta with him. Like, says he's simply the most awesome guy I've ever worked with in my entire career. He worked with Carl Anthony Towns. He's like, I got a bunch of guys that I love that I've worked with that are important to me. It's like, there's no one like Kyle. Like, Kyle's just at a different level. And I think a lot of people feel that way. The irony is, Kyle's never played with anyone on the Utah Jazz, even though he played for the Jazz. But he has worked with Lamar Skeeter, Jeff Watkins, and Vince Legarza, and Quinn Snyder, who are all coaches. Is the trade good value given Burks has been playing better than previous years and we gave up two second-round picks? It's a lot to give up for a 37-year-old. I love Korver when he was with us before. I mean, I think we gave up two second-round draft picks for Korver. That's the way I kind of envisioning it. Tells you a little bit the fact that we had to give up picks to get, like, we gave away Alec and had to give up picks to get Korver. Tells you how people think of Korver in the league. I think Alec has gotten a lot better. I'm not sure I believe that his three-point shooting was going to hold at the percentage it was at for the season. I think he was the one guy trending above, ironically. Korver's threat is much better. And if I was being critical of Alec, which I don't mean to do because he was traded, I think I was critical about him in the same way. I'm a huge fan of Alec as a person, the way he's grown up, watching with his kid. His family's wonderful. So it's one of those things where I almost feel like I would have said this when he was on the team and did say this when he was on the team and almost feel like since we've traded him, I don't want to say it because then it sounds like sour grapes. But I do think that a bunch of the area things that Alec does that we think are strengths aren't really strengths. I've always felt like his game was that he was better at things he didn't realize. Like, I think he's a pretty good catch and shoot guy. Gets it off pretty quickly. He and Watkinson have worked on his balance a great deal. He's actually making that shot. He's not a great driver and finisher. And he makes a lot of defensive mistakes. And our plus minus with him on the floor over the years has never been very favorable. And I think that's just a sign of just kind of the little mistakes that he makes in the course of a game. But boy, is he a better player today than he was over the last few years. And the battle back from the injuries has been something that his teammates truly admire and deserves a great deal of credit for. So I just think it's really as simple as the skill set that the Jazz are desperately in need of right now is somebody that can make a shot. is something that Kyle Korver presents. And I think that when you, you know, guys, even last year, of all the returning players, Alec had the lowest plus minus one on the floor of any player on the team. Okay. And he was pretty good last year. So I just think Kyle is a guy that brings a skill set to this roster that we needed. And frankly, the wear and tear of the schedule wore us out and got us a little concerned. Are the Jazz more likely to go after the next big piece in free agency or through this trade this year? And does the Korver trade affect that? The Korver trade would only affect this in this sense. If you thought the Jazz were going to be able to trade or wanted to trade for, making this up, who are we talking about? Otto Porter. Okay? If the Jazz wanted to trade for Otto Porter, the only way they can trade for Otto Porter is probably some sort of Derek Favors. Well, I guess they could do Derek Favors, Dante Exum once they both become available December 15th. So, like, and I guess they could do Derek Favors. Well, if Korver's still tradable, I guess they could do Derek Favors, Kyle Korver. So maybe it doesn't impact in that way. My thought was that you've lost an $11 million salary to move. And so is there an opportunity cost somewhere else that $11 million salary could have existed that you could have moved Alec Burks with some other player to bring in a big-time player? I don't know who else that player would be. I was just using Otto Porter. You know, I think the free agent market's going to be super interesting in this offseason. You know, the other one I would throw out there is if the Pelicans keep struggling and Nikolai Mirotic is a free agent, we were talked about a lot with him before. So could have we done, I'm just throwing this out as like what the cost was. Could have we done Alec Burks and a first-round pick for Nikolai Mirotic if the Pelicans are suddenly obviously out of the playoffs and falling apart? But they would have to be trading Anthony Davis at the same time for you to do that deal. Like, they're not going to make that deal unless they suddenly decide that they want a center here at some point to relieve Anthony Davis of some of the pressure, and they decide Derek Favors is a good mix with Davis. I've actually always thought Derek Favors was a good mix with Anthony Davis in some ways. So, you know, that then would just be a Favors from Mirotić deal and it wouldn't have anything to do with anything. So I don't know. So, no, I'm just trying. The answer to your question is it's an opportunity cost. If could have you used Alec Burks' salary slot for some other player other than Kyle Korver, I'm not sure you could have gotten a better shooter. Right? Like, I'm trying to think. A player I had on my list in the offseason who's not a really great player is Detroit's Reggie Bullock. He's a $2.5 million player. You're not using Alec for that. You're doing something else with that. Can you use the term splash uncles when referring to Korver and Jingles? Probably not, because I don't quite get it, but you'll have to help me out. Maybe like Step Brothers? Don't they like look like the show from Step Brothers? Instead of Splash Brothers, they're the Splash Step Brothers. Come on, that's not bad. Could we go after a younger, better player with Burks like Porter or Beal? Korver seems like a panicky win now move versus future. I mean, guys, Alec didn't have a lot of trade value. We gave up 2 second-round draft picks with Alec to go get Kyle Korver. Like, Alec on his own is a salary slot, not trade value. Like, I think that's the takeaway from this deal. The guys that are wide open aren't necessarily the ones we want shooting the ball. That is true. Part of our corner three problem is Dante and Derek are taking a lot of them. However, part of the problem is that Dante and Favors are there. Now somebody else is there, and it really might open up some things for the Jazz and change some things. Last year, before we blew out a healthy Golden State at Utah, you reported Quinn Snyder told the team, if we can keep focus for 48 minutes, we can hang with these guys. And it seemed like one of the turning points of the season. Do you feel like they're lacking focus at all, or are shots just simply not falling? I think there's about 12 things that are going on with this team right now. And that is why they, you know, last night they were great. So here's one of the biggest things that's happening with this team last night. We haven't played bad teams. Like, there's a real value to playing not very good teams. One, they don't take a lot out of you physically. Two, you look good and you feel good about yourself. Oklahoma City's winning because they feel good about themselves. Minnesota's winning because they feel good about themselves. If you go read my season schedule preview every year that I do on the day the schedule comes out, the first thing I look for after I check my daughter's birthday and my wife and I's anniversary is I go look at feel-good stretches. Where's the stretch where you play a bunch of teams in a row, you win three or four in a row, and you start to buy in to that you're really, really good? Like, I haven't done this, but I would bet if we go back and look at last year when we get red hot, I'll bet you we played five bad teams in a row, won all five of them, or played four bad teams in a row, beat them, won one other game that we shouldn't have won. Now all of a sudden we've won five in a row and we thought we were great. Like, that's a huge part of it. We're playing so many good teams and we're losing, and so our guys don't have that belief right now in who they are, and so I think that's a huge part of it. Then shots aren't falling because that's all part of it. Then I think rule changes screwed us up a little bit. That's part of it. Trying to recreate last year's magic is impossible. That's part of it. There's a lot of things that are going on. Dante Exum and Derek Favors are getting a bunch of our corner three shots that they didn't used to get. Dante's playing. He's new. He's not like we didn't have Dante last year for most of the year. Like, that's a new piece. All right, let's walk through this. Last year, we go and win in Detroit. It was a not very good team, and we won on a pretty fortuitous play where we got it into overtime on a Joe Ingles inbound. Ricky hits a shot against Toronto, and we feel good about ourselves. We've now won two in a row. We come back home, get 3 days off, are completely rested. For all we know, Golden State played the night before. I can't recall, but they might have. And we beat them by 30. Okay, there's the game you probably didn't expect. We beat a bad Phoenix team by 30. There it is. There's four in a row. We feel good about ourselves. We go on the road, and now we feel good about ourselves, and we link a really good win against the Spurs, who were kind of in a funky spot at that point, beat the Pelicans, played a not very good Memphis team one, played a not very good Charlotte team one. Now, I mean, then we just thought we were great. Got a great win in Portland. Came home to beat the Spurs, beat a bad Phoenix team, got blasted by Portland, didn't matter. Came out of the All-Star break, beat a bad Dallas team, lost to Houston, beat Minnesota, nice win, beat a bad Sacramento team, a bad Orlando team, got a great win in Indiana. I think Victor didn't play in that game. Beat a bad Memphis team. Like, that's a huge part of our winning last year. Just played a bunch of not very good teams. Beat the Pelicans in New Orleans, which was awesome, and then played a bad Detroit team, a bad Phoenix team, a bad Sacramento team, and lost to a bad Atlanta team. The schedule is a huge part of this. Then we beat a bad Dallas team, lost in overtime to San Antonio, beat the Warriors who didn't have all their guys, lost to Boston, beat a bad Memphis team, got a great win in Minnesota, who didn't have Jimmy Butler at that point, weren't very good. Bad Laker team, beat a Clipper team that was out of it, beat a bad Laker team, beat the Warriors who didn't play their guys. Like, we just believed. That's a huge part of this. Frankly, that puts a little suspect in the whole run last year. Didn't mean to do that. All right, we got about 2 more minutes. Long show. Nothing but the best AB. Absolutely. Okay. Trade Rubio and Korver for Bradley Beal. Why would Washington do that? Because the league's purpose of trading is to help the Jazz. I love the shirt. Where can I get an XL? Also, seeing that I am known as Jose Ingles on Twitter, should I be the only one worthy of being introduced to Joe Ingles? Fair point. This is a Nike shirt. I don't know if they sell them at the team source. These are the coaches' shirts. They were nice enough to give them to us. If OKC has the number one defense and yet they are number one in offensive rebounds, why aren't we looking into more offensive rebounds instead of running back so fast? I think that is a great, great question. We need Korver to shoot at least 4 corner threes a game. That would be a lot, but that would be a sign that Quinn's offense is really, really rolling. I knew I should have kept my pink Korver jersey. Yes, you should have, Joe. Off topic a little. Are Dallas a dark horse to make the playoffs? They're looking really good. Doncic looks as mature as Mitchell did last season. Doncic is good. They're playing really well. They, I think, have done what I just talked about, which is played a bunch of teams that aren't that good. And so they feel good about themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's important. That's how you get, you win. You're winning those games is important. And really, really important. We just haven't had a chance to do it yet. We haven't even been given the opportunity to do it yet. Or maybe Dallas has just turned it around. Oklahoma City, good win. Chicago, terrible. Beat us badly. Beat the Warriors, who were shorthanded, but that's good. Lost at Memphis. Beat Brooklyn. Beat Boston. Give them credit. They're playing good. Just take them. I don't know. Let's keep an eye on it. They've been home a lot. I think fatigue is a big issue. I think it's swinging games right now. Who is our bench scorer now? Like, I don't want to get into this in this way. Like, was Alec our bench scorer? Right? Like, so that was the idea, was that when Alec was on the floor, he would be, this is exactly my point on Alec, and I'm going to end on this, and I don't mean it to be critical, but the vision of what we thought he was good at and what he is good at are not the same thing. Like, that's how we envisioned Alec forever. First, we tried to turn him into a point guard for the longest time, which he's not. Then we've now, our next version of him was that he was going to be the guy who came off the bench and played the microwave offensive explosion role off the bench. Like, I don't know if I think that's true. Right? I mean, he had 22 in the blowout against Toronto because he just played the end of the game. He had 18 in Dallas, which was a great, and he was very important in the November 7th win against Dallas. And he played pretty well against Sacramento the other night, where he had 14 in 21 minutes. So, like, twice all season, maybe Sacramento the time before. I just don't think that's true. And I don't, you know, and by the way, on the shooting thing, he was shooting really, really well earlier. He's 4 of his last 19 to finish with us. Like, I don't know. I'm just, we'll say that. Like, I'm just not convinced that what we thought he ever was is what he ever was. Like, that's, and maybe that's the poor guy spent 8 years on his with a franchise trying to make him do a bunch of things that he could never match with. And maybe this is going to be great freedom for him to get going and roll. That would be awesome. All right, that wraps us up. Thank you very much. I know there were a lot more questions, but I can't do an hour show today. It is Locked On Jazz. Thank you for the support of Intercap Lending, the store, and Mizuma USA. Sam Amick, Locked On NBA, was awesome today, so go grab that next. And I will talk to you tomorrow from Charlotte. We'll talk a little bit about the Brooklyn win tomorrow, and we'll preview Charlotte. And we'll talk more about the trade. I'll look at what the other questions are.